Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Professor Asher Susser, Senior Fellow at the Moshe Dayan Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Tel Aviv University, and author of an upcoming book, Israel, Jordan, and Palestine, Challenges of Palestinian Statehood. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I complained last week that we didn't have much Jewish news. Boy, you should worry about getting too much of what you ask for in this world. Terror attacks, Gaddafi falling in Libya, Glenn Beck touring Israel. All kinds of news at once. First, there were the terror attacks. After a longish lull, last week a series of coordinated Palestinian terrorist attacks from Gaza struck several targets in southern Israel, that is, buses and innocent civilians, murdering 8 Israelis, including 2 soldiers and units that eventually killed the terrorists. The integrated attacks in Eilat, the southern beach resort city, and on buses in the Negev were followed by the resumption of missile attacks on Ashkelon and Ashdod and Beersheba and, well, anywhere the Palestinian Arab terrorists could reach from Gaza. In fact, the missile attacks were the most intense in years. Hamas declared the end to its partial lull in attacking Israel. The terrorist attacks came from Gaza, but were routed through the Egyptian Sinai, a kind of Wild West in the wake of the fall of President Hosni Mubarak and the weakening of Egyptian military control on the periphery of Egypt. Apparently, the attackers, while primarily Islamic Jihad and Hamas, have been linked to elements of Al-Qaeda, or at least they wish to be linked to Al-Qaeda. The coordinated attacks smacked of a higher level of advanced planning than is typical of Hamas. Apparently, several of the terrorists were Egyptians as well, a new aspect to all this. The victims were Moshe and Flora Gez of Kfar Saba, Yosef Levy of Holon, Yitzchak Sela of Beersheva, Dov Karlinsky and Shulamit Karlinsky of Kfar Saba, Chief Warrant Officer Pascal Ibrahami of Jerusalem, and Sergeant Moshe Naftali of Ofra. Most of the people who died were primarily vacationers going by bus to Eilat. The military men who died were sent out to stop the terrorists. Hamas followed this up by sending a rain of missiles towards the targets they could reach in southern Israel. Some of them were intercepted by the Iron Dome, the new missile defense system I saw when I was there in May. Israel retaliated with airstrikes and missile attacks on terrorist targets and killed a number of Hamas and Islamic Jihad murderers. The highest up target, Ismail Asmar of Rafiah in the Gaza Strip, a senior commander in the Islamic Jihad who financed the terror attacks in southern Israel, was killed after intelligence sources said that he was planning more terror attacks soon. Asmar was killed by a missile fired from a plane at the car in which he was traveling. So what does all this mean, and why now? Well, it means that the truce that was kind of in existence between Israel and Hamas is now over. And it happened now because Hamas has to raise its status in the eyes of the Palestinian people, since Fatah, its secular rival, is about to declare a Palestinian statelet in the West Bank, which it controls, and Gaza, which Fatah doesn't control, that one's controlled by Hamas. And as always, the way you raise your stature in the eyes of the Palestinian people is to kill innocent Israelis. Expect Israel to now clamp down on Hamas and to work to help Egypt get more effective at controlling its eastern border. This will be hard to achieve. We mourn the Israeli citizens who are brutally murdered by these Palestinian terrorists, and we pray that their families find comfort. לבכות לך תהיה חזק למעלה געגועי כמו דלתות שנפתחות בלילה לנצח אחי אזכור אותך תמיד וניפגש בסוף אתה יודע
ויש לי חברים, אבל גם הם קווים אל מול אורך המשגע.
That was Arik Einstein's sad song, Livkot Lecha, Wait for You, in memory of the terror victims in Israel last week. Further west in the Middle East, the long-delayed fall of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya finally occurred. Tripoli overrun by rebels, Gaddafi's sons captured, and he himself in hiding or flight or somewhere. Since he was, frankly, completely nuts all along, and since the last several months, Gaddafi was engaged in a battle with both rebels and NATO's air forces, including American jets, the eventual collapse of his regime is not entirely unexpected. Gaddafi was always erratic, wearing weird costumes regularly and changing them a lot, having all kinds of strange pets, household guards of beautiful women, and veering from totally anti-American hatred to somehow becoming an ally in the war on terror. But he was also plainly a brutal and totally anti-Israel, pro-terror, and anti-Semitic figure. Finally, Gaddafi is gone, or seems to be, and while Libya now has an avowedly moderate Islamist regime, it should still be better than Muammar Gaddafi, no? That must also mean that Syria is next. While the UN refused to condemn the Hamas terror attacks on Israel, it has also somehow continued to ignore Bashar Assad's war against his own people. His regime, too, is tottering. We'll see just how long he can hang on. Well, that's enough news to start, all of it from the Middle East. Kind of makes you long for the quiet days of midsummer, doesn't it? When we could talk about Jewish summer camp.
Hello, Mother. Hello, Father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining.
Ah, well, you can't stay at summer camp all year, now can you? Even if you want to. Well, someone who is definitely not in summer camp, in fact, he's in Israel right now, will be here shortly. In a few moments on Two Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Professor Asher Susser, senior fellow at the Moshe Dayan Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Tel Aviv University, speaking to us from Kfar Saba. He'll explain to us just what the upcoming declaration of Palestinian statehood really means. All that when we come back in a few moments on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. Do you ever say to yourself, I just don't know what I feel like eating? You know you're hungry, but for what? Of course, I could try to tempt you with a Mama's Pizza. It's got mountains of fresh cheese, acres of sauce, and a crust that's so flavorful. Yes, a Mama's Pizza is always tempting, especially when you think about its aroma just as it's ready to come out of the oven. And what can you say about our toppings? How about meaty, crunchy, spicy, fresh, flavorful, delicious? There's no doubt when your mind is unsure about what your stomach is craving, hearing about a hot, fresh Mama's Pizza might just help you decide. But I'm out of time, so I guess I'll have to wait until later to give you the details about the delicious cheesiness and tantalizing nature of our hot, fresh pizza. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is now enrolling students for the fall. THA always knew they had the best kindergarten in town, and now it's official. Following the Outstanding Teacher Award presented by the Jewish Federation of Southern Arizona to THA's kindergarten teacher, Jackie Miller. Kindergarten through 8th grade curriculum centers on rigorous academics infused with Jewish values and ethics, providing a well-rounded educational experience. While many schools have cut the all-important arts, physical education, and health classes, THA is integrating them into the curriculum in a safe, nurturing environment. We graduate capable, confident students poised for the next chapter in their lives, prepared to enter higher levels of school, and ready to contribute to the larger community. Tucson Hebrew Academy is an award-winning Blue Ribbon school. Last year, THA awarded over $700,000 in financial assistance to students and their families. Great education is more affordable than you think. The best education comes from THA. Space is limited, including in their kindergarten. Call 529-3888 today to register or arrange a private tour. That's 529-3888 or visit THAAZ.org. We're delighted to welcome the Two Jewish our guest this morning, Professor Asher Susser, a senior scholar at the Moshe Dayan Center for Middle Eastern and African Studies at Tel Aviv University, speaking to us from Kfar Saba, a very nice suburb of Tel Aviv, I might add. Professor Susser is an expert on Israel and the Palestinian issues. He spent the academic year last year on sabbatical at the Crown Center for Middle East Studies at Brandeis, a senior fellow at the Myron Robert Kraft Chair in Arab Politics. He has spoken widely and written widely and has a new book coming out this coming fall. He was also a visiting fellow at the Arizona Center for Judaic Studies here at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
So everyone is talking in the media and elsewhere about the upcoming declaration of a Palestinian state. What exactly is that going to mean?
Well, it's not going to mean a great deal in terms of changing realities on the ground. And there's a lot of hesitation on the Palestinian side and amongst other parties in the Arab world about whether to go through with this and whether it is really such a good idea. I think they will go through with it because it will look like, very embarrassing for them to back away from it.
Yeah, they kind of have to go through with it now, don't they?
Exactly. They're going to have to go through with it. But it's very clear, just up from the last events of the last few days, the attack on Israel, on southern Israel a few days ago, is an indication as clear as any that the Palestinian Authority, which is appealing to the UN for recognition, has no control over the Gaza Strip, which is supposed to be part of the Palestinian state. So the events of the last few days have highlighted the fact that this government doesn't really have control and therefore will make it a little bit more difficult for them to get recognition from those who they really need, which is the United States and the Western Europeans, who probably will not go ahead with recognizing them. So the achievement will be moderate, and that's the problem, that this moderate achievement may result in a great deal of disappointment. And therefore, some upon the Palestinian side, because of the disappointment, may resort to other means.
It's one thing to get recognized in by countries in South America or Africa. It's quite a different matter to have the most powerful country in the world not recognize you, like the United States. And several European countries have already recognized Palestinians. Are Britain and France likely to follow suit or not?
They're very hesitant about this. I'm not sure whether they will go through with it. The Germans probably will not. There are a number of other European countries, members of the European Union, like Czechoslovakia and Eastern European countries, that are now members of the European Union that probably will not go through with it. Israel realizes that it cannot get a majority in the UN. I mean, you can get a majority in the General Assembly for almost any resolution you like.
You mean any anti-Israel resolution?
Yes.
Right.
But when it comes to this issue, what Israel is aiming for is not to get a majority to support Israel, but to have what Israel calls a qualitative minority. That is, those countries that do not grant recognition are really the most important ones. And that for Israel would be an achievement if, in addition to the United States, key Western European countries refrain from this. And this is not because Israel is against the idea of a Palestinian state. Israel and the present government included have long accepted the idea of a two-state solution and of a Palestinian state. What Israel doesn't want is a resolution that seeks to coerce Israel to accept the 67 boundaries as the final contours of a settlement. And that is what Israel really objects to. And I don't think the Palestinians are going to get that, which is what they really are trying to obtain from the UN.
We will talk much more with Professor Asher Susser from Tel Aviv University when we come back in a little bit on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter, Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation. 322-7035 or visit handmaker.org. Taste of Judaism has everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. In three upbeat, fun, free, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with outstanding rabbis, including Too Jewish's Rabbi Sam Kohan. Learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at various times at three Tucson locations, at Temple Emmanuel in central Tucson, on the northwest side, and on the east side. All classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is free. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 327-4501. More than 3,500 students have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? Call 327-4501 and ask for Mila to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 327-4501 for your own Taste of Judaism.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as popular podcasts. And if you have a request, please, by all means, send it to TooJewishRadio, TOOJewishRadio at yahoo.com. We had a request this week from one of our devoted, loyal listeners, a beautiful young woman. Her name is Naomi Islin, and she is 97 years of age, but very young at heart. She is also a big fan of the Too Jewish Radio Show and a huge lover of Yiddish music. And since she needs a little cheering up right now, I mean, who doesn't? Here's a favorite Yiddish song of mine, dedicated to Naomi Islin, called Bobinyu, Grandma. Says the little boy, don't say the prayer that ends the Shabbos, the Sabbath, Saturday night, tonight. Wait a little. Let the beauty and peace of this holy day last a little longer. Please don't send me back to school and to that mean rabbi and all the tzoros of the week.
Oy boben yozog noch nit got fun Avraham. Was is dos mit dir heinter heim? In a mariv seit is noch die Sonne nit vergangen. Oi boben jo wart noch avar. Der Gott von Avraham spannt uns zurück ein in den schweren Tage täglichen Jahr. Zu tragen dem Golles, dem Cheder, dem Reben, dem Ohl und die Deiges von der Wahl. Da bleibt wie versteinert die Bobbe beim Fenster. sie ist zu mein Betten wie Teub. Bei Gott von Abraham und es keikelt darauf sich a auf ein dunkler Schor. Bei Gott von Abraham und es keikelt darauf sich a auf ein dunkler Schor.
That was Bubbin' You for our special listener, Naomi Islin, the classic Yiddish song as sung by, well, me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov.
We've been talking about the giant protest movement in Israel, totally peaceful, of course. And we dealt with the economic issues the last couple of weeks that prompted so many young Israelis and their parents and grandparents, for that matter, to come out and protest. One issue we didn't really talk about, just alluded to, is the inequality issue. Israel was founded as a labor Zionist, kind of a socialist country. It had, by some accounts, nearly the most socialized economy in the world 20 or 25 years ago. That's changed a lot. That's fueled part of these protests too, hasn't it?
I think it has. I think Israel in some way represents an alternative to the two main economical structures we know today in the world. One would be the communist structure that we saw in Russia and didn't seem to succeed much. The other is the capitalistic system that we have here in the United States, which also seems to face some challenges.
Especially right now.
Especially right now. In Israel, the society on one hand wants to have free market and you know, have a real competition like the capitalistic system. On the other hand, people do believe in the moral duty of society to help people at need and to help, you know, the weaker layers. But it's not also only to help. It's also a question of who is the owner of assets. For instance, here in the States, if you dig at your yard and you find oil, the oil is yours. That's the capitalistic system. In Israel, if you would dig at your yard and find oil, the oil is still the property of the country under the idea that, well, you found oil, which, yeah, you were lucky, but you should share this luck with the rest of the country.
Right.
Okay, so it's a little different. It's not communistic. It's not capitalistic. It's somewhere in between. And I think in the last several years, it tended to be more capitalistic. And because Israel is that small, most of the fortune was concentrated at the hands of, I might say, between 6 and 10 families. And that's also part of what created this rage in within so many people.
You know, it's interesting. Israel was really a socialist country not socialist in the sense of a communist country, as you said, but definitely the idea was all for the good of the country. When it didn't have very much, everybody shared this sort of kibbutz mentality. That started to change under Netanyahu's first prime ministership. You know, he started to liberalize the economy. They sold off some of the banks and the utilities, and they began a privatization. But it certainly, to an American, the Israeli economy is still fairly state-controlled. I mean, a large part of the economy is still involved in ownership by the state.
You know, it's always a tricky question, because on one hand, you want to give private owners the power to do and create, because that works, and you don't want to give the government too much power. On the other hand, for instance, let's talk on the shoreline. If you give a shoreline that was public to a private owner, and he now charge me $20
to go to the beach.
To go to the beach. then that's not fair. It used to, I used to have a share at that beach, right? It was public owned, and now I don't.
Could you say that these protests are in a way sort of about the old Israeli Zionist dream, you know, and kind of harkening back to a really different, an earlier idea, you know, idealistic understanding of Israel?
Well, I think maybe those protests, and I hope they will lead us not to the past of the Zionism, but to the next step in Zionism of not only creating Israel as the state nation of the Jewish people, but also making Israel the best place for one to live in.
Amen.
Amen.
We'll talk next week. Thanks, Guy. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant and J-Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, I've got a new take on J-Bar. We like to go there, actually love to go there, after Friday night services.
Rabbi, I'm staffing extra heavy for you. So come in after services, come out on the patio. It's beautiful out there right now. Have a margarita, have some great dinner. After services on Friday, any night of the week.
So every night except Sunday, my wife loves the fish tacos. I love the chilaquiles, but you also have specials on a regular basis.
Every night we have specials at J-Bar, and all of the food expresses the flavors from this region. It's the beautiful, wonderful, exciting flavors of the Southwest. It's the flavor of where we live.
How can people make a reservation?
Just give me a call at 615-6100. Go to my website, Janos.com, make a reservation, and we'll be waiting to see you Friday night, any night.
Sounds great. Janos.com.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Oh, beautiful, far spacious sky.
September 11, 2011 marks the 10th anniversary of the events that changed our country and our world. In Tucson, we'll commemorate this day as both a memorial remembrance and an inspiration to help build community, country, and our world for good, for life, and for peace. Out of our diversity of background, creeds, and races, we embrace a deep unity that employs our collective gifts to remember 9/11, to be inspired to strive for a better future for us all. Here on Too Jewish, we highlight the events commemorating this 10th anniversary of 9/11 each week, building up to the 10th anniversary itself, September 11th, 2011. There's a website dedicated to this, Tucson911.org or Tucson911.com. For more information on all 9/11 Tucson events, go to the website, Tucson911.org. Sunday, September 4th, a week from tonight at the Fox Theater, there'll be a screening of the film Divided We Fall. Valerie Kaur drove across the U.S. in the aftermath of the attacks of September 11th and documented stories from Sikh, Muslim, and Arab-American communities examining issues of race, religion, and security post-9/11, discovering surprising connections with her own family history. A dialogue panel will follow the film, all presented by the Culture of Peace Alliance. And the University of Arizona has a week-long examination of issues related to 9/11. 9/11, How We've Changed Week, sponsored by the SBS. Events run Thursday, September 1st, that's this coming Thursday, through Thursday, September 8th, and include discussions on security, politics, war, and the media. For more information on all 9/11 events in Southern Arizona, go to the website, Tucson911.org.
Who more than self? Have country love and mercy more than life.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, one of my favorite countries, and yours, I think, Turkey, has been in the news a great deal, and it affects Jews, it affects Israel. Let's talk about what's going on in Turkey.
With pleasure. As it happens, I've been there twice in the past 45 days on two different occasions and with very different sets of people.
All so, I want in life is your frequent flyer miles.
Right. Okay. Well, I wish I always got the frequent flyer miles, but more often I'm using them than acquiring them. In any case, first of all, let me try to correct one misapprehension. The current prime minister of Turkey, who's been reelected at least once and is likely to be reelected again, is a man named Erdogan. There's a silent G in the middle of that, which shouldn't be pronounced, but even if you call him Erdogan, people know who I'm talking about. He is perceived wrongly as being an Islamic fundamentalist, an extremist, whatever. He's from a moderately Islamist party. He is truly a centrist. He is he's Muslim, but moderate in his values and cherishes the multi-ethnic nature of Turkey and the democratic secular vision of the founder of modern Turkey, Kemal Atatürk. So his being in office is not necessarily a bad thing for America or for Jews. In fact, in some ways, his being in office enables Turkey to step up and play the leadership role it always longs to play within the Islamic world. You know, there's a long, complicated history between the Turks and the Arabs. And basically, the Arabs were colonized, oppressed, put down, whatever, imposed upon by the Ottoman Turks for many centuries. And it wasn't until really the 20th century that most modern Arab countries emerged as independent countries. Even Egypt, which we think of as a leader in the Arab world, there was the Khedive of Egypt, who was a quasi-independent ruler, but actually a vassal of the Ottoman Sultan. And an interesting sidebar here before we go back to the really important stuff is the grounds of Mehmet Ali Pasha, who was the Khedive of Egypt in the middle of the 19th century, were eventually purchased by the Sabanji family, a very wealthy industrialist family, who created a foundation that endowed a whole private university and a fabulous museum. And the old Sabanji mansion has an incredible collection of Ottoman calligraphy going back to the 14th century. But adjacent to it, and mostly underground, in sort of a bunker-like way, except for the restaurant and cafe that have a breathtaking view over the Bosphorus in the distance, there's a modern museum which has temporary exhibits, and currently they have an exhibit of cultural artifacts from the Aegean, the islands in the middle of the Aegean and both coasts, from around the period of 3000 BC, plus or minus 500 years. So you go there and you see jewelry and vases and pitchers and bowls and a war canoe, and you think, you know, in 5000 years, how little human nature has changed. I mean, how much our technology and our tools have changed, internet, cell phones, cars, airplanes, whatever. But basically, the people who made these things and used them are recognizably fellow human beings. It's pretty humbling in some ways.
You know, my wife still likes jewelry today. So thanks, Don. We will come back and talk more about Turkey next week.
Looking forward to it.
And now it's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. One day, Jacob asks his wife, Yetta, "You always carry a photo of me in your purse. What on earth do you want with my picture?" "Well," replies Yetta, "whenever I have a problem, no matter how impossible it seems at first, I look at your picture, and the problem doesn't seem a problem anymore. It just melts away." Jacob smiles with pride when he hears this. "It doesn't really surprise me, Yetta," he says. "Haven't I always told you how miraculous and powerful I am for you?" "Yes, I know you have," says Yetta. "And the way it works is like this. I take your picture out of my purse, I look at your face, and I say to myself, what problem can there be that's worse than this?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. This week's portion from Deuteronomy is called Shoftim, Judges. It establishes a process for the administration of justice, and it includes one of the most powerful statements in all religious, philosophical, or ethical tradition. Tzedek, tzedek tirdof, justice, justice you shall pursue.
In the Torah, which has no kefil lashon, no extra words, a repetition of a word means that it has additional importance and power. Here, the word for justice, tzedek, is repeated, emphasizing that justice is extraordinarily significant. We must be not only fair in life, but truly just. But more than that, the Torah teaches that we must not only be just, but tirdof, pursue justice, chase it, make it a goal for our own lives and for our civilization. It's not enough to act well in a place where justice is not the norm. We must strive to change an unjust situation into a just one. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Each of us must pursue true justice. It's easy to understand that for Jews, justice underlies everything good in society. Without justice, there's no peace. Without justice, there's no morality. Without justice, we simply can't trust our government or its leaders to act well. Even love is only truly possible where there is respect and a sense of fairness, which are in essence aspects of justice. Be just, God commands. Seek. No. Chase justice in your own life. Work for justice in your society, and then good will come. It's a great and holy message in a society like ours, in which the pursuit of happiness sometimes seems to be the only goal. But the better pursuit, indeed, the most meaningful real pursuit for us, is justice. May our actions and our words help to make our society more just in this week and in the coming year. When we come back on Two Jewish, Professor Asher Susser will explain the whole Middle East to us. And boy, will you be surprised about some of it. Find out when we come back on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Yes, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. Conservative radio personality Glenn Beck toured Israel last week, giving, well, I guess, concerts, planned rallies, I don't know quite what to call them, at three venues, including the beautiful Roman amphitheater in Caesarea and near the southern wall excavations below the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Glenn Beck is a big supporter of Israel now on evangelical Christian grounds, although he himself is a Mormon, and most of his audience on the Israel trip consists of American evangelical Christians. Glenn Beck has now morphed from his right-wing political persona into a kind of Christian religious figure, and the rallies also featured well-known evangelical Christians like John Hagee and Mike Evans. The concert rallies highlighted Beck's strong support for the settler movement in Israel, which has brought some of the Judea and Samaria crowd out in appreciation for his solidarity with them. After all, not too many Israelis share that solidarity. And the settlers are curious as to why he supports them. Before Beck's arrival, most Israelis were unfamiliar with the former Fox News host, whose cable TV show went off the air in June after sagging ratings, but whose national radio show is still very popular. His rallies have triggered a debate over whether he should be embraced as a pro-Israel friend or condemned as a fanatic who has battled allegations of anti-Semitism. His visit is focusing renewed attention on the growing alliance between right-wing Israelis and Christian fundamentalists in the U.S. That connection between the evangelical Christian right and American pro-Israel groups like AIPAC has long been established, and many of the strongest supporters of Israel here in the U.S. have been evangelicals for years now. But this direct connection to the settler movement in Israel and this kind of highly publicized rally concert tour is something new for our Jewish state. It is attracting much attention there, pro and con. Glenn Beck has been a mixed bag for Jews. Beck's staunch support for Israeli control over Jerusalem and his criticism of the Palestinians' ambitions to create their own state have won him praise from many conservative Israeli leaders. But we have also documented here on Too Jewish his obsession with Jewish mega-philanthropist George Soros as a kind of contemporary anti-Christ and individual embodiment of the protocols of the Elders of Zion. Twice in the last year, Beck has been denounced by the pretty conservative Anti-Defamation League for bigoted and horrific comments on his show, one likening Reform Judaism to radicalized Islam. Really? And another in which he said Holocaust survivor billionaire George Soros betrayed fellow Jews to the Nazis. Beck eventually apologized, at least for the slur against Reform Judaism. Last year, Beck appeared to endorse the notion that Jews killed Jesus. His list of the world's 9 most dangerous people includes, get this, 8 Jews. And Glenn Beck speculated in 2009 that Israel might be wiped off the map, leading to all-out Armageddon, which is actually Christian evangelical belief. In any case, Beck was in Israel last week, and while settlers are grateful for the positive attention, most Israelis are responding more with curiosity, bemusement, and criticism. In a good news story, Lord knows, we can use some of that anytime. On Manhattan's Tony, extremely expensive Upper East Side, the Orthodox Ramaz School is using 18,000 square feet of the classic Reform Temple Emmanuel space for a cool $1 for 2 months this summer. Homeless after the July 11th fire in the 85th Street building that houses both Ramaz and its parent synagogue, the important Orthodox temple Kehilat Yeshurun, the school's first through fourth graders will study through October in Temple Emmanuel's Hebrew School building on 65th Street and 5th Avenue. It's a coming together of giants in the world of New York Jewry, where elite East Side synagogues, Mayor Michael Bloomberg worships, well, when he attends Temple Emmanuel. They share a neighborhood of faith and considerable cachet, but affiliate with different denominations. And the conservative congregation got involved, too. It's an unfortunate situation that unified the community, said Beryl Chernoff, the executive director of the Park Avenue Synagogue on East 87th Street. They will host Ramaz's nursery school, also rent-free. We're delighted to have them as our guests. We want to make them feel at home. This arrangement could provide the basis for an ongoing relationship between Ramaz and Temple Emmanuel, who, over their long history in New York, have never worked together before, said Mark Weistuch, Emmanuel's administrative vice president. It's this whole feeling of achdut, Ramaz director Ken Rockland said, bringing together Orthodox, Reform, and conservative institutions to do something so important, educating our children, making sure we don't miss a beat. You know, it makes you feel good about being Jewish, whatever movement you affiliate with.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Songwriter Jerry Lieber, who with composer Mike Stoller wrote such rock and roll hits as Hound Dog, Stand By Me, and Jailhouse Rock, has died. He was 78 in Los Angeles. Lieber and Stoller met as teenagers in the 1950s, and they wrote 200 hits, not bad, performed by artists like Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly, The Beatles, The Rolling Stones, James Brown, B.B. King, The Drifters, Peggy Lee, and many, many more. Lieber's first language was Yiddish. He was frequently taunted as a child on the streets of Baltimore by a gang that called him Jew Boy. Lieber and Stoller have been honored by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and many, many other music organizations. He was my friend, my buddy, my writing partner for 61 years, Stoller said. He had a way with words. There was nobody better. I'm going to miss him. We all will. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Professor Asher Susser, senior scholar at the Moshe Dayan Center for Middle Eastern and African Studies at Tel Aviv University, speaking to us from the Tel Aviv area. Professor Susser, we were talking about recognition of the Palestinian state, what exactly would it really mean if it included, what it would mean to Israel, what it would mean to the Palestinians if it included comments about Israel returning to the 67 borders, and how would that really impact anything?
Well, to have a UN resolution supported by a majority of the General Assembly that this Palestinian state of the future must be established within the 67 boundaries is a difficulty for Israel that doesn't want to return to those boundaries. But as long as the United States and the Security Council do not adopt this resolution, it has little practical meaning. General Assembly resolutions are recommendations that do not have to be carried out by the member states. And as a result, this will have some symbolic value, but not much more than that. What the Palestinians really wanted was a resolution by the Security Council. But that they cannot get unless the United States accepts their proposal, which the United States has not. The real issue here on this resolution is not so much the symbolic value that it may have, but the negative impact it may have on the region because of the tensions that already exist and the feeling amongst Palestinians that this isn't really getting them anywhere, which it probably won't. And that is potentially dangerous and can go where neither the Palestinians nor the Israelis would like it to go. There could be massive demonstrations that, although may begin peacefully, could turn into something more violent. And then all sorts of difficulties can break loose, and we lose control over a situation which has happened many times before. And that is what both Israelis and Palestinians fear. I think even the Palestinian Authority at the moment is very concerned that this may get out of hand. But they're locked into this initiative that they set out with a long time ago, and we'll go through with it. But I think it is less significant than people tend to think.
Let's talk about some other significant changes in the region. Libya fell. Gaddafi apparently is out, finally. Syria continues to slaughter its citizens in hopes of retaining the Assad regime, or Assad does anyway. What's the impact of the fall of Libya? Is Syria going to fall too?
Well, I think the regime in Syria has more of a chance of surviving than Gaddafi had. One also has to remember that if the Libyans were left to their own devices without external intervention, I don't think the rebels would have beaten Gaddafi.
Right. It took the UN no-fly zone, the U.S. intervention, right?
And the bombing raids, etc.
Right.
That is not going to happen in Syria. The Syrian issue may last longer, but I think that this regime in the long run will find it very difficult to survive. And here, for Israel, there are no great outcomes that one could imagine. But the downfall of this regime will have Syria, I think, licking its domestic wounds for some time to come in the future, which means that it will be a little bit more difficult for the Syrians to re-involve themselves with Israel, and I don't think they would like to. But we face a region which is very unstable, increasingly unstable, and a region where Islamist political forces are gaining from the revolutionary tide. This is true in Egypt. It probably would be true in Syria as well. Libya is very distant from Israel and doesn't really have much of an influence on Israeli affairs. But what is taking place in Egypt and what is taking place in Syria seems to be giving rise to Islamist forces. The same is true amongst the Palestinians, where Hamas is still very influential. This is a vicinity which is more hostile to Israel in the foreseeable future. And therefore, we have to be very cautious about what it is that we decide to do and the manner in which we deal with the peace process and what is left of it. we really have to bear in mind that we are shifting in our relationship with the region around us to something which is much more reminiscent of the early 1950s than of the post-peace era with Egypt. We are reverting to something similar to the armistice agreements that we had with the Arab states after the 1948 war. This is not real peace, but an armistice which could last, and Israel could live very well with such an armistice. But it is a framework which is less peaceful than we would have thought we were in for 10 years ago. And we have to learn to live with that too.
The secularist fall in this Arab winter, Arab spring, now it's an Arab summer, pretty soon it'll be an Arab fall, I expect. The number of regimes that have gone from secularist dictatorships to some of them continue to be military dictatorships, is this going to lead eventually to Islamic regimes all across the region?
Something like that. Islamic regimes or regimes under some form of Islamist coloring of this or that nature. The new regime in Libya has already declared that it will be what they call a moderate Islamist regime. So they're already defining themselves in Islamic terms. A while ago, I wrote a monograph called The Rise of Hamas in Palestine and the Crisis of Secularism in the Arab World. And in that monograph, I argued, and this was long before the Arab Spring, that secularism is in crisis in the Arab world. And this is true across the board, no matter where we look. And I think the Arab Spring is only a reflection of that.
You have written a great deal on Iran. A final quick question. You know, in the midst of all of these transformations and convulsions in the Arab world, nobody's talking very much about Iran. For years, all we heard was the danger posed by Iran, Iranian nuclear proliferation, and so on. What's going on with Iran right now?
Well, Iran is not less important than it was. It remains so. It has a lot of its own domestic problems. There is a great deal of economic disaffection and political disaffection in Iran, too. But one thing they are keeping at without any let-up is their nuclear program. And that, although it's spoken about a lot less because it has simply been overtaken by other events, shouldn't be off our radar screen at all. What we do see, and this is a fundamental trend in the region, the Arab states across the board are facing huge domestic crisis. They are in a prolonged period of political and economic decline. The result of this is that the non-Arab states of the Middle East, Turkey and Iran, and to a lesser degree Israel, are the dominant forces of the entire region. And as a result, you will hear ever more about Turkey and its outreach in the region. Turkey and Iran facing certain measures of competition and tension between them over influence in the region. The Americans are not talking about that much recently, but they're going to withdraw from Iraq. And when they do, the Americans are very concerned about how much Iranian influence will emerge in Iraq. And what does that mean for Iraq's neighbors? One of them is Jordan. And Jordan has a border with Israel. These all have very profound ramifications on us in the long run. Can we, in a peace agreement or without a peace agreement, can we withdraw from the Jordan Valley if Iran is going to be more influential in Iraq and that is going to influence relations with Jordan? These are all things that we have to plan for in the longer term. And Iran is very much in our minds, even if it is less in the news.
I want to thank Professor Asher Susser for a great visit here on Too Jewish. He has a new book coming out this fall, Israel, Jordan, and Palestine, The Two-State Imperative. So look for that, and you can find out about him also at the Tel Aviv University website, the Moshe Dayan Center. Thanks so much, Asher.
Thank you very much indeed.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none.
From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be John Rosenberg, the CEO of the nonprofit organization Change the World. Lord knows we ought to. And of course, listen to all of our Too Jewish podcasts on iTunes or on the TooJewishRadio.com website, and friend us on Facebook, because everybody needs friends. Our playout this morning comes from the Jewish reggae hip-hop star Matis Yahu, a former guest of Too Jewish, his song Jerusalem. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Jerusalem, if I forget you, fire and a gun come from it. Jerusalem, if I forget you, let my right hand forget what it's supposed to do. In the ancient days, we went return with no delay, picking up the bounty and the spoils on our way. We've been traveling from state to state, and I don't understand what they say. 3,000 years with no place to be, and them want me to give up my milk and honey. Don't you see, it's not about the land or the sea, not the country, but the dwelling of His Majesty. Jerusalem, if I forget you, fire and a gun come from it. Jerusalem, if I forget you, let my right hand forget what it's supposed to do. Jerusalem, if I forget you, fire and a gun come from it. Jerusalem, if I forget you, forget what it's supposed to do. Rebuild the temple and the crown of glory. Years gone by, about 60. Burn.